Australia's domestic intelligence agency has warned the country faces an unprecedented number of threats in its annual threat assessment. The Director General of the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, Mike Burgess, revealed in a speech last night that 31 major terrorism plots had been foiled since 2014, while another 14, quote, significant terror-related cases had been significantly resolved since the Bondi terror attack in December. This is the first threat assessment since the Bondi terror attack, which left 15 people dead. The head of ASIO, Mike Burgess, joins me in our Parliament House studio. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Sally. Great to be back.
You've said the threat level for terrorism in Australia, which is currently set at probable, doesn't tell the full story. What is the full story?
So my concerns are it doesn't tell the full story. So probable means a greater than 50% chance that in the next 12 months someone will advocate or undertake an act of terror. The problem with the level is the next level up is expected. So we and the police need intelligence that says someone is about to undertake an attack. Of course, the level would go up, but at that point, police would be going to the front door to stop that attack. I'm concerned about the temperature and trajectory. So within the band of probable, the increase for violence has actually happened and is happening, and that concerns me. So I'm worried that probable by itself does not send the message to all of us that need to know what the threat that we're facing.
You said, quote, "I do worry that one day an Australian will be killed at the hands of a foreign government here in Australia." Are you talking about potential civilian casualties, or do you mean a targeted killing?
Targeted killing, but that could be civilian. That could be a prominent Australian that is killed, or everyday Australians just about going about their business. So I am really concerned about the actions of some nation states, Iran in particular, and the level they will go to. That's why we describe our security environment as degraded, because some nation states will plumb the depths and go to extreme levels that we would find unacceptable and horrible.
How does the current situation compare to what you've seen previously in your long career in this area?
Well, nation states doing bad things like that is not new, but in Australia, it's not common, is it? So, and at this point in time, with a dynamic, diverse, and degraded security environment, we are really concerned about this.
14 terror-related cases have been, quote, successfully resolved since the Bondi terror attack in December last year. What can you say about those incidents? Were they plots for a deadly attack on Australians?
So as I said last night in my remarks, 31 major plots foiled, so that's major terror plots. The 14 events dealt with since Bondi are not major plots disrupted. One of them was, but of course they are still caught in their early stage, but actually if not found and checked, it could have led to a mass casualty event, and obviously that's bad.
In April, in its interim report, the Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion found, despite an overall increase in funding to intelligence agencies, the proportion of funding allocated to counter-terrorism significantly declined from 2020 to 2025. Was ASIO funding sufficient to deal with the threats being confronted before the Bondi attack in December?
So a couple of points I'd make there. One, there's a Royal Commission, so I've given my evidence both in public and classified, so I'll refrain from any other comments other than to say and repeat what I said last night. For ASIO, we increased our resources on counter-terrorism when we raised the threat level in August 24, and we increased in the months before Bondi.
When you delivered your threat assessment in February last year, you said you were concerned that anti-Semitic attacks had not yet plateaued. What's your sense of the situation now?
It's still a very real threat, and of course that concerns us. But more broadly, with the terrorism threat level at probable and the temperature increased, that threat faces all Australians, not just Jewish Australians, unfortunately.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. My guest in the studio this morning is the Director General of ASIO, Mike Burgess. In your threat assessment, you said ASIO is aware of at least five regimes trying to pressure people, including Australians, to leave their birth country, where you said victims almost certainly face some form of punishment, persecution or prosecution. You said when it comes to coerced repatriation, one country is particularly active. What are you referring to there?
So coerced repatriation is when a foreign regime puts pressure on an individual in Australia, an Australian citizen, permanent resident or visa holder, to return to their country of birth to face some charge of allegation or something. Typically, we have five nations we've seen do this. One nation is particularly active. Sometimes they're doing it to silence dissidents. In other cases, it may be there is a legitimate claim of corruption or criminality against that individual, but unfortunately, they're not coming to local law enforcement and saying, we need help, we'd like to speak to someone. They're actually deploying their own officers or recruiting Australians to track them down and pass on threatening messages and ask them or force them to leave or put that pressure on them. They also detain their relatives in their homeland and put them under pressure, who then puts the family member under pressure and seeking them to return. And in 2023, we had 8 people leave this country under coerced repatriations. 5 of them were Australian citizens or permanent residents, and 3 never returned.
Last night you revealed that the firebombing of the Adas Israel synagogue in Melbourne in December was directed by a former Australian resident living in Iraq and recruited by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. How concerned are you by the threat of Iranian state-sponsored terrorism in Australia?
That is a pressing and ongoing concern. Earlier this year in Europe, Iran-backed groups conducted attacks in Europe, and we're concerned that those operations will expand into this region, including Australia, and that could result in more arsons and even death of Australians.
Has the war and the leadership change in Iran changed that threat level at all?
The war has added to the frustrations and anger in society. That's just part of the problem that we have. It's okay to feel strong emotions about what's going on anywhere in the world. It's okay to protest. But how we protest or what we do with those feelings really does matter, and that puts pressure on our environment where the chances of politically motivated violence are higher today than they were a year ago.
Why is the overall threat situation so significant at the moment? What's driving all of this across the board, do you think?
Oh, there's a number of drivers behind this, and not one single ideology. And there's something else that's gone on in society where we're quick to anger. We don't debate. The level of tolerance is not what it used to be. I had some remarks in my speech last night of a fair go for all, the value of mutual trust and tolerance and respect. If people just took the heat out of the debate, by all means protest, but be careful how you protest. For the media, certainly continue to do your job, but be careful how you do your job. For any of us, including myself.
How?
Well, the clickbait model of media these days, no offence to anyone, but those headlines drive anger. And actually, when you see people get angry, there is a direct correlation in these modern times between anger and language, inflamed tension and violence.
On a breaking news matter this morning, an Australian woman with links to ISIS in Syria had a temporary exclusion order in place. But a short time ago on AM, the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, has revealed that this woman will be returning to Australia. Let's take a listen.
We received the final advice yesterday that we can no longer have an exclusion condition any longer for her. We've checked with our agencies. They are ready. So that permit gets issued. What it then means is the conditions that do apply to her are everything that is possible.
Was ASIO involved in this process, and are you satisfied arrangements are in place to manage this return?
Of course we were involved, and yes, I'm satisfied that my organisation is ready for the return.
What's your message overall to Australians who are digesting your threat assessment, not only for their own lives, but for their kids, the way they work, the way they live? What's the message to ordinary Australians?
Yes, so there obviously it's important that people understand the threats we face. Security is a shared responsibility, and when you're informed, you're able to make informed decisions. I'd also say that whilst it's a kind of a not upbeat bedtime reading, the threat assessment, I think Australians should still have confidence in our ability to respond, but it requires all of us to press into these issues so we can manage our risk and make Australia a safer place to live.
And just returning to the revoking of this temporary exclusion order, should Australians be satisfied that all measures are in place for the return of this individual? What guarantees or assurances can you give?
So firstly, ASIO is not all-seeing and all-knowing, and we don't want to be, but I can assure your listeners that actually the full use of my organisation's capability and powers will be used when this individual returns to this country.
Why is so much focus being placed on this individual?
Well, when there are Australians who have been overseas in places like Syria and Iraq who represent security concerns, we assess them. We know the level of the risk, and anyone who's considered a high or medium risk gets my agency's full attention.
Mike Burgess, thank you very much for coming into the studio this morning.
Thank you.